Well, I told you we had a fabulous evening planned for you, and it's my privilege to introduce you tonight, our speaker, Steve Saint. Steve, just to give you some context, how many people know of Steve Saint? Let me see. This is like the greatest privilege in the world to have Steve Saint in a small venue like this, to be able to interact with him and to hear from him. I've watched Steve from afar for years. I mean, he's like a pilot, dentist. I mean, he can like do anything. He's a Renaissance man of missions. And to give you a little bit of context, Steve Saint's father, Steve was born in 1951. Steve Saint's father in 1956, five men went in to share the gospel to land on Palm Beach, as his father was the jungle pilot, land on Palm Beach and to share the gospel with the Wadani Indians. And they were killed that day for the gospel's sake. They were going in for that express purpose. So Steve Saint grew up with the Wadani, grew up in Ecuador, and has a tremendous story and an incredible heart for missions. I don't want to steal his story. I'm sure he's going to share that a lot of that with you. But you need to understand significance. Another one of the missionaries that were there was Jim Elliott. And there were three other men that accompanied them. So they're radicals. The whole family's radical. I mean, everybody that surrounds the Saint family is red hot on fire for missions. And we wanted to blast away and to sound the trumpet for global missions and unreached people groups in particular. We wanted to accent that at D3. We want to call you out. We want to pray even that God would call you to serve and to give your life to serving the gospel wherever he has you, but in particular internationally. Steve, you come up, share what's on your heart, all right?
The reason that I do get to speak a lot more than I want to, and usually they're much older than you all, and usually the crowds are a fair bit bigger, but none as important as you all, because every time I speak to high school students, I realize that you guys are right at the peak. You guys are just getting ready to make the most important decisions of your lives, and some of you here are going to make bad decisions, and it'll take you till you're my age to work your way out of them. But some of you are going to make good decisions, and some of you are going to go out and make your mark on the world. And if you looked around after this camp and tried to decide who is who, there's not a chance that you'd pick the right ones. Unless you look around you and find somebody that you think is the least likely person here to leave a mark on the world, and then just hold on a few years, you might be really surprised. Eons ago, when we used to have rotary telephones, and we used to have to get up to turn the channel, we called it cool, and it's probably past six iterations since then. But look around you and find somebody that you think is really, boy, I wish I was like them, and you think they're going to make a mark, and you might be really surprised. That Jerry told me that he went to a class reunion not long ago. That's people that went to school a long time ago. And the people that he would have expected to really make a mark and do something important, one of the guys was an alcoholic and homeless. And a couple of people that they expected to do nothing had really turned out to be the movers and shakers. But I wanted to talk to you about plans, and I do know something about plans because you can't get this old without having a few experiences, but I guarantee you that the last thing that I would have ever expected to be doing on the evening of June 28th would be speaking to a group of high school students that I've never met and who probably will forget me within a couple days because a lot of stuff happens. But this is something that we do share in common, that I know because I've read it in the Jesus book, that God has plans for us, plans for me and plans for you. And guys, Christianity, a lot of people think, is just for wimps. I'm telling you, after living my life, which has been a little bit different than yours, but after living this long, I can tell you that it's a radical call It's an extreme call, really, to a radical life following a revolutionary leader. If you really want to live the Christian life, you're going to have to get out of the rut. Don't follow the crowd, because in the United States, it has become a club thing, but that's not the message of this book. If you want to really live the Christian life, I suggest you get one of these books and read it. This is a great book. Do any of you have it? Do you? Oh, it's a different version. This, I read the Bible in a number of different languages because I had to learn English. I have been in the Netherlands, but I grew up speaking a tribal language in Spanish, and then I went to school and learned English. And our language down in the jungle sounds kind of like this. They have great verbs in Wautarito. Inike ekano tomenga ingante ne were ponenga inyumo tomenga we womo namai. Isn't that great? Inte koe wena mai kewen ke kaimpa. Try to get your mouth around that one. That's just one verb. Kewe ke kaimpa. Ere wengung inke tomenga wenga ingante ingipoga inyumo. Don't you just love that? You want me to translate that for you? It says, so the creator to the dirt, people living there, keeping them in his mind, giving his child only one, a son, sending him coming, he came. Whoever that person now, keeping the creator in their mind, believing in him, that person also not being lost and always not dying will live. Tell me you don't wish that you'd grown up speaking Wautarito. Well, the Jesus book, that actually was from the Jesus book, but in a different version. Let me read you what God's plan is for the world. And then I want to get to God's plan for you, all right? It says here in... I won't tell you where. Let you guess. It says, so you guys go all over the world and teach all the different peoples so they can learn about me and come my guys. Baptize them and they're going to come tight with my father. Oh, I forgot to tell you this. How many of you understand Hawaiian pidgin? The Jesus book, that's Hawaiian pidgin. Weren't you understanding it? No? Okay, let me try this again a little bit more slowly. This is the Jesus book. Now, some of you have the Jesus book with the before Jesus book attached to it. Ask your neighbor. Okay, this is in the part called Matthew. Okay, this is in the at the very end of Matthew, and it says, so you guys go all over the world and teach all the different people so they can learn about me and come my guys. Baptize them and they're going to come tight with my father and me his boy and God's good and special spirit. Teach them how for do everything I went tell you guys for doing. You know what? Okay, one more time. So you guys go, okay. Teach them how for do everything that I went tell you guys for do. And you know what? I'm going to stick with you guys all the way till the world go pow. That's Matthew 28:18-20. That's God's plan for the world. And it's His promise that if you go and help Him do what He wants you to do, to tell other people how to do the things that He taught you to do through people. Well, actually, He taught some other people a long time ago who taught people, who taught people, who taught people, who finally taught you. And now it says in here, now it's your turn to go and teach other people so they can come tight with Christ too. Well, guys, this could be a long night because it was obvious that one didn't work. Did you guys not watch Star Wars? Didn't any of you watch Star Wars? Do you remember Jar Jar Binks, or was that before your time? Well, Jar Jar Binks, where do you think they got Jar Jar Binks talk? It's Hawaiian pidgin. No kidding. You don't believe me? Okay, I'll read you another one. Okay. Jar Jar Binks did always say, "Do you like?" Didn't he? "Do you like?" This is the Jar Jar Binks Bible. Listen to this one. This one's for you too. This is important. It says, whoever trusts God, no way they're going to come shame because God is going to do everything what He say. You can trust Him. I'm sorry, I take that last part back because I added that in. It didn't say it. It says just whoever trusts God, no way they're going to come shame, because God's going to do everything what He say. And then a little bit later says everybody that asks the boss for help, him, he's going to take them out of the bad kind of stuff they doing. But hey, how are they going to ask Him for help him if they no trust Him? And how are they going to trust Him if they never hear nothing about Him? And how are they going to hear about Him if nobody ever go tell them nothing about Him? And how are they going to tell people if nobody send them for go teach? Here comes the part you've been waiting for. Just like the Bible say. I kid you not, this is the Jar Jar Binks Bible. Just like the Bible say, when people go for tell the good stuff from God, hey, that's so awesome. Okay, two of you are going to want to know, the two of you who can still read, you're going to want to know where to get one of these, right? Two choices. You can go on the internet and you can find it at www.pigeonbible.org, or buy a ticket to Hawaii and go to a Christian bookstore and you can buy them on the shelf. Good book. Got a good message. But you guys don't care about plans for somebody else, or do you? Well, I'm going to tell you about some plans that I know for that God had for some other people. And then I'm going to challenge you to let God write your story. Now, I grew up a little bit differently than you guys did. Now, you saw the trailer. I was the cute little kid in the trailer. And my dad was my hero. And then one day he flew off into the jungles and I waited for him to come back. And he didn't come back. So I waited the next day, and people started arriving at our house. I didn't know what was going on, but I really didn't care about them. I was just waiting for my dad to come back. I waited the third day, and then finally, I think it was on the morning of the fourth day, my mom called me into a room and sat me down on the bed and told me the most horrendous, terrible, awful, very bad. Did any of you guys have, did your parents read you that book? It was Alexander's Awful, Terrible, Very Bad, No Good Day? Three of you. That was Steve Saint's Awful, Terrible, Very Bad, No Good Day, because my mom told me that my dad was never coming home again. And I just couldn't stand the thought of going through life. Now, I didn't know how long life would be, but I just couldn't stand the idea of going through life without my dad. I couldn't even imagine that there would be any reason to keep on going. I knew my mom was wrong, but it turned out she was right. Never came home, and it ruined my life. Until God began writing another chapter in the story. And then my mom came to me one day. Now, Mom, in the meantime, had done this really strange thing. Every night when we'd get together for devotions, like we did before my dad was brutally killed, speared, and his body hacked apart with machetes, we would get together every night as a family. Now, when we'd get together, it was so obvious that my dad wasn't there that it was excruciatingly painful for me. But what made it even worse is that every night when we'd get together, my mom would do the most dastardly thing. She would pray for those people that had just brutally killed my dad and my uncles, Roger and Pete and Ed and Jim. And I wasn't very old, but I knew that that isn't the kind of thing that you should do to somebody who's just killed your hero. And then my mom came to me. It was a couple of years later. It seemed like a lot longer than that later. And she told me, I mean, she was excited. And so I thought something great was going to happen. And she told me that my aunt, Rachel, my dad's sister, was going to go and try to live with those same people that had just killed my dad and my four uncles and had hacked up their bodies and thrown what was left in the river. And my mom is now telling me that my aunt wants to go and live with them. And my mom is excited. I thought my mom liked my aunt. I just couldn't get that. I was thinking, what is wrong with you adults? Duh. You don't get it. What did they do to my dad and Roger and Pete and Ed and Jim? And now Aunt Rachel is excited about it, and my mom is telling me, and my mom is excited. I'm thinking, golly, give me the keys to the house. Somebody responsible needs to be watching over things. My aunt went in and started living with them, and you know what? They just about killed her. I read her journals after she died in 1994, and I read three different times where she wrote in there that they came and they were going to kill her. Not a pretty thing. I mean, it's not like getting shot by a sniper from a long distance and boom, it's gone. I mean, They drive spears into your body, and then you live until you die either of bleeding or a lot of times of infection. And then something else happened. About 2 years after that, my mom came to me and said that Aunt Rachel wanted me to go and live with her, with those people that had killed my dad and those four men with him. And I was excited by that time. I mean, look at it from my viewpoint. My dad and his friends had guns. And do you guys ever play that game, rock, paper, scissors? Okay, paper beats rock, right? Would you girls teach some of these boys that are looking at me with really blank stares? It's obvious they don't. Guys, they have international competitions in that. You should really get with it. Well, we didn't play that, but I knew that in the game of spears and guns, that guns win. And there's no third one that beats guns. And I knew that my dad and his friends had guns, and yet they had gone in and they'd been killed with spears. And my little mind just kept working on that and working on that. And I just could not come to any other conclusion other than that my dad and his friends had decided to let those people with spears kill them rather than killing the guys with the spears. And that just didn't make any sense to me either. Now, about this time, I'm starting to get used to it. But I figured if my dad and his friends were willing to let those people kill them instead of shooting them, they must have thought that those people were pretty special. And then when my mom started praying for them every night, which really still just kind of gets me, I thought, why would my mom do that? And I came to the same conclusion. She must think that they're special. And then my aunt wanted to go in at the risk of her life and try to live with them. Guys, I finally figured these got to be the most important people in the whole world. I couldn't wait to meet them. So when we flew in this little bush plane and landed at this really tiny little airstrip, and I got out, I expected that they would do like all the other Indians in other places that I'd been in the jungles. I mean, the first thing they do is come up to see if these things were growing out of my head, because none of them had these, and back then they were black. And then they would look at my arms, because I had hair on my arms, and they didn't. But this group went a step further. They stood back and they kind of looked at me and talked about me, and they were kind of laughing and, you know, acting like they were a little embarrassed. And I didn't know what was going on. I was looking at them too, because their costumes, they were all wearing native costumes, which consisted of earplugs, a little bit bigger than Josh, actually a lot bigger than Josh's. They were wearing those and feather headdresses, most of them, and a string. Well, actually about four strings all bundled together around their waist. Although, out in the jungles, it's just like every place else. Girls always like high fashion. So some of the girls had their strings around their knees. Some even had them down on their ankles, which I thought was pretty risque. And that's it. And I used to go look at the magazines because there were some pictures in there. And here I am standing, and everybody's absolutely stark naked. Except, of course, for the string, wherever it might be. And that was, I just thought that was kind of cool. I mean, think of all the time you could save shopping. And they always fit. You want to wash your clothes? Dive in the river. So I was checking them out, but they were checking me out. And finally, this old woman came up because they couldn't figure out what I was. I mean, I was about 8 at this time, but I was pretty tall, and they were pretty short, although really well built. I'm talking about muscles. And so they sent this old grandmother over, and she came over and she starts patting me down, and that made me a little nervous. And then she started doing other stuff, and then finally she reached out and she grabbed my pants. I had elastic waisted pants on, fortunately. And she pulled them out, and she looked in my pants, and she started giving everybody a running commentary, and then they all started to laugh. Because I don't recommend that. That's even at 8. That's a little bit hard to deal with. And then they all gathered around me. I think they thought that I was much older than I was, and they couldn't figure out what I was because I didn't have, you know, certain anatomical specificity that they thought I should have by that time. And when they found out I was just a little boy, then they all thought, okay, take off the rest of his clothes, you know. And then we started getting along pretty well until they realized that I was really ignorant Because, I mean, I was already 8, and I didn't know how to build a house. I didn't know how to make a canoe. I couldn't pole a canoe, which I did learn to do. In fact, you saw those guys coming down the river in the movie in the canoe. If you ever watched that movie, there's some copies over there, but End of the Spear, I got to play a part in the movie. Now, I had a big part, but I never showed up. If you watch that movie and you see the airplane flying, recreating my dad's flying, they couldn't get a stunt pilot in the movie industry who was willing to fly that old 1946 airplane down in the jungles in Central America, so I got to do all the flying. But then when they came to that scene where they got these guys coming down the river looking for my dad and his 4 friends, they didn't have anybody who looked a gringo who could actually pole a canoe, so they gave me the part. But unfortunately, the missionary whose part I was playing wore shorts that day, so they wanted me to be in authentic costume, so they put shorts on me, and the ratings people said they were going to give it an R rating. So then they had to color my legs and do stuff. It was really sad. Do you guys want to see? Okay. That was quick. These people wanted to know why I couldn't do any of those things. I couldn't even hunt with a blowgun. I didn't even know how to make poison for my darts, for goodness sakes. I couldn't even put the kapok on the darts, which is how it holds air so that you can shoot monkeys. And yeah, I know, some of you are wondering, why would you want to shoot monkeys? Well, down there we don't call them monkeys, we call it dinner. And then they found out I couldn't track animals, I couldn't spear fish, and finally one of the warriors in the tribe came to my aunt, and he was really upset. And he said, "What is wrong with your boy?" He said, "He's totally ignorant. He can't do anything." And my aunt said back to him, "Minkai, you having spear killed his father, who do you say should teach him to live?" And then she wrote in her journal, Minkai adopted me after that, but I never knew why until I read my aunt's journals and saw, or no, until my mom died and read something that my aunt had written in her journals and sent a copy to my mom. And in it, my aunt Rachel said that Minkai left, and then he came back a few hours later and he said, "It's true. Having spear killed his father, I myself will teach him to live." That guy decided, because he had started walking a new trail, that man who killed my father, who drove a spear through my dad's head into the sand on that little beach they called Palm Beach, that man adopted me. And you know what? By the time he adopted me, I was in love with him. He was as close as I had ever had to that point to having a dad. It just seems strange, doesn't it, that he was the guy that killed my dad? Do you know what? This book talks about that. Now, if somebody tells you that Christianity is for wimps, I'm telling you it isn't. Now, you can live a wimpy Christian life. There's no question about that. But in Jeremiah 29:11, and you guys all know this, it says, God says, "I have plans for you." I mean, for you. He says, "I know the plans I have for you, plans for benefit and not for evil, for good and not for evil, to give you a future and a hope." And guys, the reason I love speaking to young people your age is that the frivolous time when you're dependent on everybody else is just about past, and yet the major decisions that you're going to make, who you're going to live with, what you're going to do and why you're going to do it, those are still ahead of you. And guys, not only does your future depend on that, but the future of a lot of other people in the world depends on that. And you know what? If I could tell you something that I learned in another really hard lesson, you don't want to wait too long to get serious. You don't want to wait too long to realize that this is an extreme call to a radical life following a revolutionary leader, if you live it according to this book. My wife and I have 4 kids. We had 3 boys and then we had a little girl, and that was really special because my brother has 3 sons, my sister has 2 sons, Jenny and I had 3 sons. I mean, a whole generation there were no daughters. And then finally we had a little girl, and so my wife gave her my name. Her name was Stephanie. And Stephanie, she must have been about 3rd grade, and I just thought, I don't want her to ever grow up. So I put her on my lap, and I said, "Stephanie, promise me you'll never grow up." And she said, "Poppy, I promise." And, you know, she kept her promise for about 2 more years, and then she started growing up, and finally she did the worst thing that she had ever done. I mean, she was a pretty good kid, and then she went to college. I mean, I was devastated. I thought she was going to stay home with me, and, I mean, you know, we're two peas in a pod. I loved Stephanie. And then she went away to college, and I only got to see her on Wednesdays and on weekends. And then something even worse than that happened. Have you guys ever heard of that organization called Youth for Christ? I'm telling you guys, stay away from them, because they got in touch with Stephanie, and Stephanie could play the bass guitar and played the keyboard and piano, and they talked her into leaving college, which was close to me, and traveling around the world for a whole year. Do you know how long that is? I mean, do you remember when you were waiting for Christmas when you were a little bit younger? I know you don't wait for Christmas anymore, but do you remember when you were younger and you waited for Christmas and those last 2 days just never, never seemed to end? I mean, it was just so long. That is what I went through for 365 days while my little girl was gone. And then she came back one day, and we went down to the Orlando International Airport, and it just happened that Grandfather Minkai, well, that's what my kids call him, the man that killed my dad, the man that adopted me, was at our house. Now, he's a great, fun-loving guy, and we always like to invite people over, because Minkai is used to wearing just a string. So in the States, when he realized that people up here get a little bit nervous when you're walking around in just a string, so he got some tighty-whities. And so when we'd have company come over, and they'd always say, "Hey, where's Minkai? We'd like to meet Minkai." So I'd call, "Minkai, pung ang aiba. Boy, come on, Minkai. People want to meet you." So Minkai struts out like in his tighty-whities, you know. And people are all trying to pretend like they don't notice that he doesn't have any clothes on except his undies. And they're and Minkai would go around, shake all their hands, and say something to him like, "Ooh, you're nice and fat. What, are you too old to..." And he's not too ashamed to, you know, feel, "Ooh, nice, nice. That's, yeah, that's very nice. Okay, see ya." And he goes back in to watch cartoons with Jesse. Minkai was at our house, and I said, "Minkai, Nemo's coming." That's Stephanie's tribal name. I said, "Stephanie's coming at the Ibowe, at the place where the airplane lands." So I said, "Come on, let's go." And he said, "Let's go. I haven't seen Stephanie for a long time." Nemoweka gokemba. Let's go to Stephanie's place. So we got in the car. We drove down to Orlando Airport. Now, can you imagine if you were coming home after a year? Wouldn't you love it if your parents were standing there with a big sign with your name on it? "Welcome home." What's your name? Hannah? "Welcome home, Hannah." Wouldn't you just love that? Wouldn't that just make you feel really, really special? So I didn't want to be holding it, so I gave it to Minkai. But Minkai can't read, so he's jumping around, and he's pretty short. Now, he looks like Cochise, only he's a bit this tall. So he's running around the Orlando airport, jumping up and down with this sign upside down. It says, "Welcome home, Stephanie." So I see Stephanie walking out of the jetway, and she sees this sign, and the last thing that she wants to do is have people identify her with that sign. But Minkai saw her, so Minkai drops the sign and goes running after Stephanie and grabs her. And everybody's running. You know, I mean, it's not like he was blending. He really does. He's got big earplugs in his ears, and he's got a headdress on, and he's been out in the jungles a long time, and he's about 75 years old, but really macho. And he's running through the airport like O.J. used to. Oh, you guys don't know who O.J. is. He's running through the airport, and then he comes to this tall girl with blonde, long blonde hair, and he grabs her, and it's like, "A kidnapping, a kidnapping." And then he starts dancing. You know, we do the tribal dances, and he's holding Stephanie in the air, and he's doing this tribal dance, you know, and telling her how happy he is that she's home, and telling her how happy she should be that he was at our house when she came. And then we went home to have family reunion for Stephanie. I mean, can you imagine? Do you guys ever watch movies? Have you watched? Forget you girls. You've watched while you were sleeping, right? So you know about leaning. Okay. Well, we get home and we're having this great welcome home party for Stephanie, and I passed Stephanie in the hallway, and she leaned on me. Joe Jr. wasn't there. Stephanie leans on me, and I just thought, "Oh God. It can't get any better than this. Why don't you just beam me up right now?" I just, my heart was so full. You won't understand this until you've got a little girl that got to be 5'9" and loves you. And I just thought, oh God, please don't let anything change from this. And I thought, hey, we got years and years and years to enjoy this, and I just want to make sure that no ugly was going to come by and try to talk Stephanie and leave me again, because I'm telling you, I was going to shoot him. I got mace, I got pepper spray, I got electric fence, and I've got high caliber guns with small shot. And then Jenny came to me and she said, Steve, Steph's back in her room. Let's go back and be with her. So I said, yeah, ditch the family. Now, we'd started having grandchildren back then. We only had two at that time. We have 16 now. But so Jenny and I went back to Stephanie's room to get rid of everybody else, you know, because they're all playing. And they all wanted to talk to Stephanie too. But she was my little girl and she had come home and I wasn't sharing her with anybody. So we went back to the room and Stephanie said, Pop, I've got a headache. And I thought, yeah, it's no wonder. When was the last time you slept? You know, they'd just been down in Trinidad. And before that, they'd been in India. And so I gave her a couple of ibuprofen. She said, Pop, don't you have faith? Doesn't God do stuff? Doesn't He care about things? I said, yes, Steph, He cares about things. Of course, what do you mean? She said, I don't want ibuprofen. I want you to pray that God will take my headache away. I said, hey, no big deal. I mean, it says in here that a sparrow doesn't fall to the ground. I'm thinking, what's a sparrow next to my daughter's headache? So Jenny sat on the bed and she's holding Stephanie. Now, Jenny's about 5'4". I found her down in the Amazon. No kidding. She was lost in the Amazon and I was a guide. And I went out and found her and I thought, I am keeping this one. And I did. 37 years. So Jenny's sitting on the bed and Stephanie's sitting on her lap. And I put my arm around these girls because see, I know that God cares about us. He has a plan for us. And I'm just riding high because my little girl has come home and we've got the rest of our lives together because I'm never letting any get near. And while I was praying that God would take my little girl's headache away, she made this funny sound. So I opened my eyes and I looked at her. And guys, I saw her eyes roll up into her head. I mean, I thought, Stephanie, I didn't know you could do that. And in the next instant, I thought, she's not playing. Something is happening. And I just happened to have a cell phone in my pocket and I took it out and I dialed 911. And then I held my little girl until these men in a fancy red truck with lights all over it came to our house. And they ran in and they tried to grab my daughter from me and I wasn't letting them have her, not without me. So I ran out and I got in that fancy red truck with them and one of them tried to tell me that I couldn't go with them. That was the last thing he ever said. No, I got in with him. He looked at my face and he realized, I don't think this is going to work. So I got in with him. We went down to the emergency room. And you know what they told me down there? That my daughter, who's just laying on a bed and looked just as natural as any of you young ladies here, except that her eyes were closed and she had a tube down her throat and IVs by that time. This man I had never met came out and told me that my daughter was dead. I'm telling you, during her welcome home party, and I'll tell you, if faith was like a reservoir, somebody had just pulled my plug out. I thought, no, it can't be. No, this can't be, no. Look, she's just perfectly normal, and I felt her arm, and I could feel her pulse. I said, no. He said, she's had a major injury. And I said, no, you are wrong. She came home. She's been with me. I was praying for her, and I was holding her. Nothing happened. I'm telling you, nothing happened. Well, he was referring, she had had a massive cerebral hemorrhage. And she was brain dead. And yet she was warm, and she looked so natural. And guys, I'm telling you that the only thing that I cared about was that God would make it possible for my little girl to sit up so we could go and finish our our welcome home party. For goodness sakes, if you're gonna take somebody during a welcome home party, is the worst, absolutely last conceivable time that anybody who loves anybody could do something like that. I could feel my faith, this faith that I'd had from the time I was a little boy, I could feel it running out. It was like the bag is emptying, and it was just, and I just felt so helpless. And I thought, oh God, this can't be happening. What is going on? And then you know what happened? An old man who happened to be down there in the emergency room came up, and he understood what was happening, and he put his arms around me, and he said, Steve, this is going to be all right. Steve, this is good. And I just wanted to let me go. Get out of here. What are you talking about? This is good. But he didn't say it that way. He said, Babe, boto wa bopa. Nyone, mepo wengungi, nemo, tomingo weka antigo kaimba. This guy came up to me and he said, now I see this well. Don't you understand what's happening? Father Creator loving Stephanie just like you and I love her. Now he's saying, it's my turn. Now I want her to live with me. You know who that was? That was the same guy that drove a spear through my dad's head when I was a little boy and ruined my life. And now here in a later chapter, that same guy is holding on to me and telling me, don't quit trusting now. Don't quit trusting now. It's God's turn now to have Stephanie. And then a few hours later, a man came up to me and sort of was apologetic and said, I'm sorry, but I have a form that I need you to sign. And I thought, hey, whatever. And I started to sign it and I saw something on there that said organ. And so I started reading it. This man was handing me a piece of paper asking me to sign this thing that would say that he could take my little girl down into a surgical operating room and he could remove her organs so that other people could live when my daughter was dying. And it happened during our welcome home party. And then this old man told me that it was okay, that he saw it well. And then you know what he did? He started going around the emergency room there in the hospital in Ocala, Florida. And he started grabbing people that were there in the emergency room. They couldn't understand. They didn't know what he was doing. And he was begging them, please, please, don't you see what's happening here? Oginkamo being a God follower, or Nemo being a God follower, she following his trail, now she's going to live with him in his place. And he was saying, oh, please, please, won't you please come and follow this new trail that Itota, God's son, marked with his own blood? He marked this trail because at the end he took the last of his blood and he marked your name there. And he was saying, oh, please won't you come and walk this new trail with me? Because when we get there, we're going to speak our name and they're going to let us in and we're going to live with God happily in his place forever. And then he said, Babette, do they understand my talk? I said, Mempo, Inyanamai, they don't understand your talk. He said, Baba, then you have to tell them. And that's what this book says. I'll read you one last one. Guys, this is part of the plan for you. It says, that's why, this is number two for the Corinth people. It says, you guys right here tonight, especially you younger ones who have the whole rest of your life, I mean, one of these days, you might read in some magazine or some little flyer, Steve Saint died flying his car. I'll have to explain that to you. If we have time, I'll explain it. It says here, that's why whoever stayed tight with Christ, they one new kind of guy. That's what had happened to Grandfather Minkai. He killed my father. And that wasn't by any means the first person he had killed. And it says here, that's why whoever stayed tight with Christ, they one new kind of guy. The old things don't stay no more. Look, the new things won't come. All that stuff, it come from God because he wouldn't bring us back the same side with him because of what Christ wouldn't do. And now he tell us for work so that other people can come back the same side with him too. Because we to talk of guys for Christ. So we tell all the different people that God stay begging them for come back. Because we Christ guys. So we say, hey, I beg you, come on you guys, come on back the same side with God. That's what God has called us to do. And there aren't too few to go around. In our world tonight, guys, there are 3 billion people. That's 3,000 million people on this little speck of dust floating out in the universe tonight. And they don't know. And most of them don't have any way to know unless we and people like us who are willing to live a radical life by an extreme call following a revolutionary leader, unless we start living by this book and get out there. We can't transform anybody. No miracles we do. All we got to do is go tell them what happened to us. And if it hasn't happened to you, I suggest that you get with somebody here who can tell you what can happen to you. Minkai always asks me why we wear these things, and I explain to him that these are sun things because we live in these big buildings and so we can't see where the sun is. So I told him, I can look at this and I can tell where the sun is. He said, how about at night? I said, at night I can still see where the sun is. He said, but there is no sun at night. And I said, yeah, it's going around. And then I tried to explain to him the world is round. He laughed at that. He said, nobody could live on this half because they would just fall off. So I took him to India so he could see that, you know, there. He said, the people, the foreigners just look at this and then get scared. Once we were flying and the plane landed and Minkai looked at me, I mean, really serious. He looked at me and he said, Baba, I need one of those sun things and one of those talking things. And I said, why? And he said, because when the big plane lands, you have to go like this and then like this. Guys, we're out of time. I'm almost out of time. Completely. I'm 60 years old. I never thought I'd get this old. Guys, you have just reached the point where you've got to make the big decisions in life that are going to determine not only where your life is going to go, but I hope it'll determine where the lives of a lot of other people are going to end up by telling them that they can get off their trail and they can start walking God's trail. Because God has a plan for you and His plan. And I pray to God that you'll help fulfill it. A lot of hurting people out there. Guys, I'm not going to show you that video, but there are some there's some videos over there, and there's some free ones. And if you get one that says Air Venture 2009, and you go down where it says Maverick, it's just a short one, but I've been working for about 6 years. Oh, that's part of missions, designing a flying car. Or you can go to YouTube and look up flying car Maverick. Tell me that isn't a cool thing to get to do. Dan, thank you. Guys, I hope that we meet again. And if we do, will you come up and tell me where we met before? And then tell me that you're letting God write your story, okay? Thanks.
Steve, one of the things that we're trying to encourage the high school students here while they're at camp is to interact with our speakers and to put the truths that they learn into their DNA and to have a little bit of Q&A. And I just wanted to ask you a couple questions and you can answer sitting right there. How do I develop a heart for a people like the Wadani or the nations?
Well, whether you like people in foreign countries or not, the best way not to waste your life is to find out what God's plan is. And He says in James 1, I mean, it says pretty clear, if you want to know what God wants you to do, ask Him and He'll gladly tell you. I didn't really believe that until I met Jenny, that girl that I found out in the jungles, and yeah, I wanted to marry that girl, but I knew there's no way I can decide I'm going to live with this girl for the rest of my life and still think she's beautiful when she's 60, which I do, by the way. And, of course, you should see. I started asking God. I said, God, I got to have you show me. I need to know what the plan is. I need to know what your plan is because I can't live with this girl. I can't live without her, but I know that I'm not determined enough to make this decision on my own. And you know what? He just gave me an absolute confidence. And little by little, I learned that God actually will tell us if we ask Him. Man, if you don't like Indians in South America, I would say God probably doesn't want you there. This isn't a life that we have to force ourselves into. You really, really like something? I would take a real close look because God's probably doing something. God just made me love those people. Of course, I grew up with them, had a history with them, but I've lived in West Africa, in Muslim country, and I found I loved people there. I don't know. God works in mysterious ways. He really does. If you're just open and you're willing, I would suggest you start on a regular basis just saying, God, show me. God, show me. God, what do you want me to do? Just show me.
Populate their prayers for them from your perspective, looking back and as a young boy. What would you... Is it just, Lord, show me? Or is it something... I mean, is it, should I... I mean, I've often heard, I'm just going to plan to go. And if, Lord, you want me to stay, then... I mean, how do you're thinking there?
You know, I was getting ready to speak once. There's a lot of things I'd like to speak on, but this is the story that I'm identified with, so I end up, you know, telling this one a lot. But I was getting ready to speak, and this guy introduced me, and he said, now Steve Saint's going to come, and he's going to tell you about the six missionaries that went to South America, and he kept saying the six this and the six that, and I'm thinking, uh-oh. I don't know who the sixth one is. And then the guy starts walking off and he said, oh, some of you know this story, right? And people are really nervous because nobody else knew who the sixth guy was. And he said, oh, you're probably wondering who the sixth guy is. He said, the sixth guy is Jim Smith. Jim Smith was a friend of Ed McCulley's, and they made a pact because Ed McCulley, one of the other guys that was killed with my dad, he was going to be a lawyer. And so these guys made a pact, and Ed said, I tell you what, Jim, if God calls you to the mission field, I'm going to stay here and I'm going to support you so you can go out there. And Ed said, okay, Jim, but if some reason I stay here and you go, then I'll support you. Jim stayed, Ed went, and this pastor said, you know what, Ed went every bit as much as, or Jim went every bit as much as Ed did. And I started thinking, you know, that's right. I grew up, business was my aptitude, so I was in business for years, and people would come up to me and say, are you Steve Saint? Oh, are you the son of Nate Saint? And then they'd get, oh. And then when I'd say I am, they'd say, where are you a missionary? And I said, well, actually, I'm in the oil and gas business out in West Texas, not BP. And and then people would look right at me and say, oh, I'm so sorry. Like I was a major disappointment. Now the same people get starry-eyed and they just can't. You're kidding me. You're living with and working for the same people that killed your dad and your uncles. That can't be. And it's like hero worship. They want to be groupies. But you know the hardest assignment? I was sure that when I was in business, I was in the center of God's will, at least as sure as I am now. But of the two assignments, this is the easier one. But that's what it says here. How are they going to teach them if nobody send them for go teach? It takes senders, it takes doers, it takes goers, it takes Sunday school teachers, it takes pastors, it takes... And I don't know... I mean, I only have enough time to pray for me. Well, I know I can pray for you. I'll pray for you on my way home, okay? You guys pray that God will show you. And pray specifically. He wants you to pray him. It says, if you ask him, he'll gladly tell you. But be sure that when you ask him, you really expect an answer. That was the hard part for me. Because I didn't really expect that God would tell Steve Saint what he wanted Steve Saint to do. If God hadn't told me that he wanted me doing something like coming here and speaking to you guys, I'd be back there flying my car.
One of the things we're always thinking about in student ministry is our role in leadership in calling out the called. You know, those that God wants to, you know, to deploy the gospel internationally versus locally. We know we're all called to share the gospel, so that's a yeah. Given. Is there any advice you'd give them? I mean, or even the leaders, like we want to call out the call. We don't want it to be emotional. We want it to be clearly thought through. Is there anything that stands out in your mind?
You know what I think the big deal is, Dan? It isn't what you do. It's that you do what God wants you to do. And it isn't even as important what you do as why you do it. There's something... I mean, I always thought that God needed us to help him, right? And then I was reading National Geographic magazine. That was a magazine in olden times. And they had this article on the Hubble Space Telescope, which won't make much difference to you guys, but we spent, guys like us, we spent $1 billion, or at least the government spent $1 billion of our dollars to build that thing, and then they sent out into space and it wouldn't focus, so they spent another $1 billion to get it to focus. So I was kind of thinking about this. And then they took a shot of the emptiest place in space where nobody had ever seen any stars before. Now, it was pretty small. And with the Hubble Space Telescope, you could just see thousands and thousands, and that's what, they had a three-page foldout, thousands and thousands of these points of light, and the caption said, some of the above points of light are stars, the majority of them are galaxies. And I remember thinking, what a waste, God. I mean, that must have taken a lot of energy and a lot of effort to make thousands of galaxies with millions of stars in them. Why would you do that when nobody ever knew? And then it dawned on me, it was no big deal for God. In fact, it says in Genesis, it says he made the greater light to rule over the day and the lesser light to rule over the night. And oh, by the way, he made a few stars too. And then it dawned on me, that kind of a God who can do all of that with the power of his word, there's no way he needs Steve Saint. I mean, no, give me a break. And then I started wondering, well, why in the world would God entrust his word to me to give to other people that he cares about? I mean, you think, if I learned any lesson from Stephanie dying, I realized that God is going through that same agony every day as he loses his children, and yet he has entrusted this message, the message that separates life and death for them, he's entrusted that to us, which seems that's the only dumb thing that I can ever think of that God really did. I mean, I just can't understand that. When I realized that God didn't need me, then I started figuring, I mean, it really created a dilemma for me. And then I realized, you know why God uses us? Now, this, I haven't got a verse for it. This is what I think. I think God uses us not because he needs us, but because he loves us and he wants us to find a sense of significance. So he uses us not because he needs us, but because we need him and he wants us to feel significant. Otherwise, I don't think there's anything that we can do that's important. I'll tell you what, I'm the most surprised person in the world when I get asked to come and speak any place. And coming in front of you guys, this is really, I mean, if there's a terrifying audience, it's you guys. You've got the whole rest of your life in front of you, and he just let me speak to you for 45 minutes. And maybe something that God says to you while I was up there mumbling might make a difference in your life. And you know what? I think God's going to give me stock in your life for what you do in your life. And I'm hoping that you go out and you live it for him. And I'm hoping that you teach other people how to walk his trail, who can teach other people to walk his trail. Because one day, as Grandfather said, he was walking around the emergency room. He was saying, people, don't you see how old I am? And look at Baba, he's getting old too. And pretty soon, we're going to be there in God's place with Nemo, who's laying here on the gurney. We're all going to be there, and we're going to be waiting for you. And he said, oh, please come and show up. I want to see you again in God's place. And I want to see you guys again in God's place. And I want to see your kids and your grandkids, your spiritual kids and grandkids. Well, I'd really like to see your kids and grandkids too, because some of them are going to look really interesting. Watch out for those guys in the front row, okay? I mean, that's...
One last question. Did your dad have a motto or a family saying in respect to missions that maybe your mom rearticulated to you or saw in a journal or something you remember? Something that stands out? You know, we've heard quotes from Jim Elliot over the years. You know, seemed to be the most quotable one of the five. Did you remember something or something that really... I mean, it's been with you for these 80 years now.
Yeah, it wasn't quite as succinct as Jim Elliot's. The one that Jim Elliot said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. My dad wrote in a Christmas letter just before he was killed, he said, if God would grant us the vision, we would hate mind-numbing distractions, you know, things. And we would charge the enemy with all of our force because we know that God has called us to it. And, I'm not my dad, but strangely enough, I know when my dad, if you watch not this movie, but there was a companion movie, Beyond the Gates of Splendor, or there's a video over there called, it's a freebie for you cheapskates. I don't mean that all of you are cheapskates, but anybody that takes one of those is a cheapskate. No. It's called A New Look at Missions. There's a video on there called Quest for the Alcas. And on there you see that's original footage that was taken when my dad, just before my dad and his friends were killed. And in there you see my dad with this little model airplane. He's showing the one Waorani man. Guys, if for nothing else, you should get that just so you can see their costumes. And he's taking this little model airplane. It was supposed to be my present. He took it and gave it to the Waorani, and he's showing this guy called Nankiwi, one of the guys who lied about him and got him killed, and he's showing him how if they want my dad to keep coming back, they got to go clear the trees because you can't land in the trees. So he's put these sticks in the beach, and he comes down and he tumbles the plane over, and then the guys get out their machetes, you know, the other Ed and Roger and Pete and Jim. They get out their machetes and they clear it, and then Dad comes around and he makes a nice landing. And then he runs over to George. They called him George because they didn't know how to ask him what his name was. I know George. I got to teach his son how to fly. The precursor of the flying car that I haven't shown you guys. You know, who would believe that all those things that my dad... The very things that my dad was saying, guys, if you'll clear the trees here, do any of you guys read? No way. Well, I only brought three books because I didn't think most of you guys could read. But in there, I explained that I got, when I went back down to live with the Waorani, and I can't tell you what happened, they told me later on when my aunt died that I needed to go down and live with them again. They wanted to see if I still knew how to blowgun hunt. And I'm good. I'm better than Minkai now because he needs glasses and I have them. But I got called to go over this little airstrip and I landed and this man came out with a little boy who had jumped into the river and had impaled himself on a stick. And the father wanted me to fly his little boy out to the hospital. And so I said, okay, I'll take him. And I held out my hands and the father this guy was from the downriver part of the group, and he didn't know who I was. Now, he had heard about Baba, this Waorani with white skin and hair and these things growing out of his face. And so he wasn't going to give me a son. And I explained to him, I can't take you and him at the same time, or we're going to hit those trees at the end of the runway. I said, but if you want me, I'll take him to the hospital if you give him to me. And this man took this little boy and put him in my arms and gave me his son. And it wasn't until I returned him that I realized that that was the place where my dad had done the bucket drops. That's where the people lived who had come over and speared my dad. And my dad was trying to show Nankiwi, guys, if you clear the trees, I can come in here and I can land and then we can have relationship. And my dad was speared 2 days later. And then 40 years later, I get to go in there and have relationship with those people. And I could talk to them. I mean, now I've written a few books, but you wouldn't want to write a book like that if it wasn't true, because nobody would believe it. People say, oh, this is so far-fetched. God writes that kind of stories. And guys, I'm telling you, this is your biggest decision, is whether you're going to write your story or whether you're going to let God write your story. Hebrews 12:2, he says he wants to be the author of your faith. Don't fall for the American half and half, which says you guys write your story and let God be your editor. I've read this book through my whole life, and I'm telling you, there's no place in here where he says, hey, guys, if you're writing your story and it gets messy, then turn it over to me and I'll edit it for you. It doesn't say that. It says you write it or let him write it. Don't try to mix the two stories. They don't mix well. God wants to write your story, and I pray that you all will decide to let God write your story. No telling how it might turn out. This is certainly a long ways from what I would have guessed, and some of you really do need to look up. Don't any of you understand iPhones? Come on, guys. If you have a cell phone, look up on YouTube. Look up Flying Car, the Maverick. That's what I do when I'm not speaking to high school groups.
Thank you, Steve. Marvelous, marvelous time. Thinking through impact, missions, gospel.